Ani, and welcome to Bomsida, an Aboriginal news magazine program that features news, current affairs, a focus on community and culture, spotlights on entertainment and great tunes, and every flavor from Aboriginal artists. I'm your host, Jennifer Ashwasage. The Vancouver School Board is looking into creating a separate Aboriginal mini-school to decrease dropout rates, and the First Nations Education Steering Committee thinks that's a good idea. The Wapos Bay production team has begun to develop a Wapos Bay video game. Juno nominees Derek Miller, Little Hawk, and Eagle and Hawk will speak with Bomsida. All these stories and great tunes from the Juno nominees coming right up after the news. Here's your national Aboriginal news. Jordan's principal came out of the death of 5-year-old Jordan Anderson in 2005, and now there's a call to push the bill through. Ron Evans, Grand Chief of the Manitoba Chiefs, says the principle is simple. Provide services to a child in need and decide who's responsible for payment later. CTV reports Jordan Anderson was a child with special needs who died in a Winnipeg hospital 6 years ago instead of at his home in Norway House. Federal and provincial governments couldn't agree who would cover the medical costs to transfer him home. First Nations leaders are calling for more actions since they say little has changed in 6 years. A bill in Jordan's name passed unanimously by both governments in 2008. The First Nations Child and Family Caring Society is taking the issue to the Canadian Human Rights Tribunal since they say changes aren't happening fast enough. Bill C-3, Gender Equity and the Indian Registration Act, has come into force. The act is to amend provisions of the Indian Act that the Court of Appeal for British Columbia found to be unconstitutional in the McIver case. The act is to ensure that eligible grandchildren of women who lost their status as a result of marrying non-status men will become entitled to register for Indian status. So about 45,000 people will now become eligible for Indian status. Registration forms are available through Indian and Northern Affairs Canada. The act came into effect January 31st. Pagua's First Nation is worried that it'll be left out of flood protection programs during the spring thaw. Glenn Hudson, a chief of Pagua's First Nation, says the province has been forecasting some level of flooding throughout Manitoba. He says there's a very real danger of the Fisher River once again spilling into the community, but the community has yet to see emergency preparedness to deal with the issue. Hudson says repairs due to flood damage in past years have still gone undone. Last year and the year before, about 300 homes were flood damaged. Plus, he says there are 50 people who are still not back in their homes from the 2010 floods. The Department of Indian Affairs committed nearly $5 million for damage repairs, while the province committed just over $1 million. However, Hudson said funding, which has been stalled, barely scratches the surface of what needs to be done. Public forums in Vancouver are calling for a separate Aboriginal mini-school. The Vancouver School Board held two public forums to discuss the possibility of creating the mini-school within another high school to be ready by this September. The Hook reports students in the Aboriginal mini-school would participate in pull-out programs with an Aboriginal focus in addition to regular curriculum classes. The school board was hoping the model would help to counteract low Aboriginal graduation rates. Debbie Jeffrey is the chair of the First Nations Education Steering Committee. She says Aboriginal students could benefit like French students benefit from Francophone education in the province.
Same way the Francophone authority supports French-speaking students in British Columbia. It's an opportunity to showcase their culture, to address achievement issues, and to develop a sense of community and belonging in the school system.
The board will not make its final decision until it receives recommendations from the chair of the public forums. A handful of elders in Nunavut have been certified by the Department of Education. The certification is to acknowledge their skills, knowledge, and abilities as an integral part of education in Nunavut. Under the territory's new Education Act, elders may be employed to teach about Inuit culture, tradition, and knowledge. The Department of Education says elder certification means elders are considered part of the school education staff, and a ceremony was held February 2nd to certify 5 respected elders. The NU Council of Pessimit has found out that Nevada Resources Corporation has been carrying out illegal drilling activities in their ancestral territory. In a statement, Raphael Picard, chief of the NU Council of Pessimit, says the council had never given permission to Nevada to drill in their territory, and they're demanding the drilling to stop immediately. The NU Council has filed a complaint against Nevada with the Quebec Ministry of Natural Resources and Wildlife. The council is also requesting that the necessary measures be taken to inform the company of the various irregularities. Chief Picard added that if the unauthorized exploitation of the Pessimit territory continues, the council will have no other choice but to take legal action to protect their Aboriginal rights as recognized by the courts. A water expert who was recently appointed to a government panel has resigned. CTV reports Helen Ingram from the University of California, Irvine, resigned before the panel was to have its first meeting next week. The government-appointed panel is supposed to design a credible way to monitor the environment effects of Alberta's oil sands. Ingram told media she resigned over her concerns that the panel lacked Aboriginal representatives, and she was also disappointed that the panel lacked enough scientists. An official with Alberta Environment told media the resignation was disappointing but hopes to replace Ingram before next week's meeting. The official also said the government believes that the panel will adequately connect with Aboriginal groups to assess their concerns. A group of First Nations from around the Ottawa area are outraged after a development company gets ready to clear-cut an area near Beaver Pond. The 1,100 hectares of forest is considered historic with spiritual significance. It's also home to a 10,000-year-old circle. The area is being cleared to make way for a new subdivision. Several First Nation leaders say there hasn't been proper consultation on the development. The clear-cutting was delayed for nearly a month in January for an archaeological report, and a day of prayer was held at the site January 30th. Two men also chained themselves to trees February 1st and staged sit-ins at the mayor's office. Fire department funding on reserves has been deemed inadequate. That from Six Nations Fire Chief Michael Seth. He told the Hamilton Spectator that he's calling on Indian and Northern Affairs to address the woefully inadequate funding for fire services for First Nations in Ontario. He says there are four fire stations in his community of about 12,000, and that's only covered by about 50 volunteers. He says a recent independent analysis proves the department needs $2.5 to $3 million, which is significantly more than what the fire department now runs on, which is $500,000 a year. The paper reports there were 9 fire-related deaths on First Nations in Ontario last year, including 1 in Six Nations. The Tribal Wichaywaywin Capital Corporation is congratulating a Manitoba credit union for withdrawing from a federal Aboriginal loan subsidy program. TWCC learned the directors of the Assiniboine Credit Union in Winnipeg voted to give Ottawa notice of its intention to leave the Loan Loss Reserve Initiative of Indian and Northern Affairs. Alan Park, CEO of TWCC, says they congratulate the credit union for doing the right thing and acting on principle. The Aboriginal Loan Loss Reserve Initiative has been an ongoing battle for TWCC as it's seeking a judicial review of the program. The production team for a children's show Wapos Bay has begun development on a Wapos Bay video game. Ryan Lockwood is a digital media producer with Wapos Bay. He says the game will be very similar to the show.
The game is going to look a lot like the stop-motion television series Wapos Bay. We're going to do our best to have all of the characters and vehicles feel like they were produced in the art department at the Wapos Bay studio in Saskatoon. The game is a kart racer game, so it's kind of classic Mario Kart style racer in which players can select their favorite character from the TV series and select from a selection of carts themselves, go-karts, and put it together, and then they race through the streets of Wapos Bay. Along the way, they can unlock different videos and fun little games that will keep them entertained and give them a little bit more information about the series and everything that's behind that.
Lockwood says video game production should take about 8 months. The Aboriginal Sports Circle has announced that the Saskatoon Tribal Council will host the 2011 and 2012 National Aboriginal Hockey Championships. Jeff Spencer, committee chair, says the 2011 Hockey Championships will be a smaller event with less teams participating, but will still be a competitive field. Teams from Ontario, Manitoba, Saskatchewan, and Alberta have confirmed participation in the event. The National Aboriginal Hockey Championships run April 26th to May 1st. The 2011 Juno nominations have been announced, and there are five groups vying for Aboriginal Recording of the Year. Rocker Derek Miller, with two Junos behind his belt, is hoping for a third. He says the Juno nomination helps give Aboriginal artists more exposure.
These are the things I think that make this Juno nomination a very big asset for people like myself to get the word out there. And I talk with colleagues all the time, like Stevie Salas and Joey Styles and, you know, all the people that got nominated. I'm sure they feel the same way.
Troy Little Hawk, known as Little Hawk, also a Juno nominee, says it's an honor to be nominated.
Well, this is really fortunate and very lucky. This is our second time to be nominated in this category, and it's an absolute honor.
Eagle and Hawk is another group vying for Best Aboriginal Recording. Vince Fontaine, spokesperson for the group, says they're no strangers to the event, and he also says the awards help give artists more exposure.
Just, you know, always wonderful to participate in these awards. We've been to the Junos before. They're always a great opportunity for new and young artists to be recognized, especially Aboriginal artists.
The other contenders in the Best Aboriginal Recording category for a 2011 Juno include Joey Styles and Ceremony. And that's your National Aboriginal News.
Yeah.
Eagle and a Hawk with What If We Could. Eagle and a Hawk are one of five contenders for Aboriginal Album of the Year for a Juno. The Vancouver School Board has been looking into whether or not it should create a separate Aboriginal mini-school. The board has held a couple of public forums on the matter, and Debbie Jeffrey is the acting director of the First Nations Education Steering Committee. She says a separate school would benefit Aboriginal students.
So I think anytime there's opportunities to support parents and students who want to have more choice in education programs, I think it's a fabulous story.
Okay, how about we go back a little bit? And I know that the Vancouver School Board had those public forums. And how did those start? And what has been the input to it or your part with it?
Well, we haven't been actively engaged as an organization. Our organization works on behalf of communities and supports communities specifically.
And how would either a mini school or separate school help Aboriginal students?
Well, the same way the Francophone Authority supports French-speaking students in British Columbia. It's an opportunity to showcase their culture, to address achievement issues, and to develop a sense of community and belonging in the school system.
Do you think it could also decrease the Aboriginal dropout rate?
Absolutely. I think there are a number of strategies at play to address the achievement gap between Aboriginal students and non-Aboriginal students, and certainly more student and parent choice would be helpful there.
Is there anything else you'd like to say or add on the issue?
Other than we do need to pay attention to the statistics in the How Are We Doing report that speak to student safety. When you look at students, Aboriginal students in grade 7, 10, and 12, and the responses to being bullied, teased, and picked on, the percentage of Aboriginal students is much higher than non-Aboriginal students, and certainly speaks to the issue of belonging and community.
Wow, I didn't know that.
Grade 7, 14% of Aboriginal students report being bullied, teased, or picked on versus 9% of the non-Aboriginal students, and by grade 12, 15% of Aboriginal students report being bullied, teased, or picked on versus 7% of the non-Aboriginal students. And these statistics are in the Ministry of Education's How Are We Doing report.
Wow, and I would expect that an Aboriginal mini school or standalone school would also reduce those statistics significantly.
Absolutely, because I think the issue of student safety, as indicated in this particular report, requires some immediate action by all the education partners in the education system to address.
I have another question about how many secondary Aboriginal students are there in the city, or would you happen to know that?
I don't know that number, I'm sorry.
Okay, so BC or the school board doesn't have an Aboriginal self-identification policy at all?
Oh, they do. They do. The information, each school district has a How Are We Doing report that would indicate the numbers of Aboriginal students in the system, but those are given to districts specifically. And the information that's published by the ministry generally is the provincial-wide one that's on their website.
That was Debbie Jeffrey, Acting Director of the First Nations Education Steering Committee. Wapos Bay is a stop-motion show which airs on APTN, and the production team is working on a video game for it right now. Ryan Lockwood is a digital media producer.
Wapos Bay has received some funding through the Canadian Media Fund and the Shaw Rocket Fund in order to build a video game. We're working with service provider Toronto. Tony Walsh, his company is called Phantom Compass. And I guess we're just embarking on a 8-month project and just on the initial stages right now to build a video game.
So what do you hope it'll look like or become?
Well, the game is going to look a lot like the stop motion television series Wapos Bay. We're going to do our best to have all of the characters and vehicles feel like they were produced in the art department at the Wapos Bay Studio in Saskatoon. The game is a kart racer game, so it's kind of the classic Mario Kart style racer in which players can select their favorite character from the TV series and select from a selection of karts themselves, go-karts, and put it together, and then they race through the streets of Wapos Bay. Along the way, they can unlock different videos and fun little games that will keep them entertained and give them a little bit more information about the series everything that's behind that.
So it looks like it's going to be an all-ages game, and where do you hope this is going to be distributed?
Well, the game is all being produced in Flash, so you can go right to wapoosebay.com and play the game there. It'll also be on a lot of different Flash hubs. I guess online there are many, many different portals where you can go and play Flash-based video games, so you can play it there. In addition, the game will be embeddable, so you'll be able to play the game from different websites that embed the game.
Okay, so that sounds very cool. I also understand that you'll be able to use Cree language skills throughout the game.
Yeah, we're going to build a few little Easter eggs and sort of skill points in on a knowledge of Cree. We're not sure exactly how... let me start that again. There will be some Cree words built into the game. The game isn't going to be totally bilingual, but there will be, if you do speak some Cree, then it's definitely going to help you do better at the game. So... So learn your vocabulary now.
Get a couple of words in there, eh? And Ryan, is there anything else you'd like to say, Rad?
Yeah, Wapoose Bay is just a really fun series. It's been produced in Saskatoon for almost 10 years now, and it's traveled all over the world. And so, you know, it's always been a TV series, and now we're really excited to bring it to the web. We have wapoosebay.com as well as wapoosebay.com/blog. Our production blog is really fun behind-the-scenes look at the new movie that's being produced right now here in Saskatoon. You can go into the blog and learn all about the people behind the show and some of the technologies and processes that are used to bring Wapoose to life. So we're really excited to bring a whole new digital component to the TV series, and we hope that all of our fans are really going to enjoy that.
That was Ryan Lockwood on the production of a Wapoose Bay video game. Now here's Juno nominee Derek Miller with Something Bad, Something Good from his CD, Derek Miller with Double Trouble.
Something bad, something good.
Something Good, Something Bad is on the Miller with Double Trouble CD, and that's been nominated for a Juno in the Best Aboriginal Recording category. Derek already has two Junos behind his belt, and he's excited about the potential for a third one. But while he's happy about the nomination, he wishes music by Aboriginal artists can get more mainstream airplay and be nominated in other Juno categories.
The Derek Miller with Double Trouble record was initially a concept record that a business associate came to me with, and it was supposed to be a gospel record. It turned into what it is. Managed to get Willie Nelson to sing a duet as well. And we released it through iTunes. It's an independent thing, but we're now just talking with major label distributors and trying to create some infrastructure in Indian country to have our music be out there and have mainstream exposure. I mean, I'll take any kind of media exposure I can within the native markets, because it's almost impossible. It feels like I'm in the civil rights movement a little bit in the 60s, because every time I go to radio with my music, they say, we don't play native music. We don't have a native hour. So, and little do they know that native music was born through the blues, even with Charlie Patton as a Choctaw and Link Ray as a Shawnee. So in essence, American rock and roll is native music.
That's interesting that you talk about that, because I had a very, very similar conversation last year with Digging Root Shoshona Kish. You know, there's not enough mainstream airplay out there for Aboriginal artists, and I really don't know what the difference is.
Okay, so here's the deal. If we got control of the media airwaves, that would give Native America or Native, you know, Indigenous North America a lot of clout and a lot of power. And I think it's a political ploy a little bit, because even with in business, I mean, we can't participate in any kind of corporate structure because of the Indian Act and all the things that are go along with being on the reservation and stuff like that. So, I mean, but that's, you know, we have our own things and we're trying to, you know, make business with whatever we can. But think about it that way. When Kanye West got up and said Beyonce had the best video of all time at Taylor Swift's expense, he wasn't wrong. I mean, even the way that he did it wasn't wrong, because somebody had to say that. Because corporate America has to take care of their own as well, so they have a voice within the media. So think about that. And if we could get all our people to back some mainstream media, well, if we just bought, you know, some mainstream media and then just plugged our stuff into it, that would be probably the way to go.
It certainly would be, and I know that we'll continue to be looking for airplay parody.
Yeah, exactly. So these are the things I think that make this Juno nomination a very big asset for people like myself to get the word out there. And I talk with colleagues all the time, like Stevie Salas and Joey Styles and, you know, all the people that got nominated. I'm sure they feel the same way. It's just there's so much diversity and excitement within the Native community and the music that it's a really well-contested category. And without Buffy St. Marie and Elaine Bombray and all the people that got that there, that gave us a chance to express ourselves, you know, and give our views to give to the people, so they understand the history and the significance of, you know, controlling our own media and being a part of the mainstream media, so we're not looked upon as, you know, back of the bus sort of situation. I mean, it's ridiculous. We're living in 2011, last time I checked, and we're still dealing with these sorts of things, and it's totally ridiculous.
It is, and now we're going to switch topics a little bit. How different is Derek Miller with Double Trouble than your previous releases, Medicine, Music as a Medicine, and Dirty Looks?
The Double Trouble record gave me a lot of insight as an artist. They have a lot of knowledge in putting the music through their filters, the way they play. They created a tonal palette for me to really attack my songwriting a little bit more. It really reminds me of what Robbie was doing probably with the band, because the Southern influence that Robbie had, I think it really kind of controlled his spastic nature of a Mohawk Jewish artist. I mean, because I can tell from myself, like, I look at Link Ray and I look at the similarities, like, we're really just really, like, passionate with the music, and we tend to get a little bit, you know, I think a little bit too savage on it sometimes. Maybe that's a good thing too, but with Double Trouble, it really lent itself to give me a more softer palette to work from, and give the songs a little bit more breath, and even just recording techniques. The studio on Six Nations, Jukasa Studios, really provided a sonic platform for me to grow, because the board that I was going through is an SSL board that was modified by Abbey Road Studios, and it just sounds fat and huge and warm, and I couldn't have got that through the digital gear that I was using in the previous record. So I just grew a ton from the last record to this one, and I'm looking forward to grow more, because I'm not going to stand still with just this.
And so what else have you been up to besides getting Juno nominations?
I've been working on my buddy here, he's just showing me my thank yous and in my CD cover, and I got my dog. I thanked my dog before I thanked him. But I'm doing some movie work. I'm trying to get a production company together on The Reserve, and I'm going to do my Rocky, my Sylvester Stallone Rocky with the Link Ray project. So I'm working with the family. We're I'm trying to get a manuscript and a screenplay, and we're getting investors involved, and just learning about the movie business. And I've been doing that, trying to get infrastructure for like a distribution for our records and stuff like that, and just trying to, you know, get into some gardening and sustainable living with trying to get a building on my res here, where, on my land, and make a greenhouse so I could grow some tomatoes and fresh fruit, and maybe have like a bed and breakfast along with my production company thing. So I'm just trying to, you know, dream and keep busy and find different creative things to do, because I like writing movies, I like writing storytelling stories, and I'll just continue to make, I'm going to make music regardless of whatever, and I'll make movies too, so it's just, you know, having fun and being creative, and not, you know, trying to strengthen the nation and strengthen the Indigenous people of Canada and North America.
That was rocker Derek Miller, a 2011 Juno nominee. This spells the third time that Troy Little Hawk, known just as Little Hawk, will have been nominated for a Juno. First, Little Hawk tells us about the album Vigilance, which has garnered him another nomination.
The first song on the CD is called Silent No More, and it's basically a call to all the men everywhere to speak up and take action in stopping violence against women. And we have a couple songs on the CD that deal with the issue. There's a song on the CD called Nina's Dreams that honors a young lady who was murdered in Alberta, and whose mom puts on a gala event annually to celebrate her life and the lives of other missing and murdered in Edmonton. It's called Nina's Dreams. And so there's an example. We always also have a song called $13,000 on there that tells the story of a grandmother in our community here named Jane, who received a check for $13,000 from the Canadian government as a residential school survivor. And when she got the check, this was before the national apology, she said, "I don't care about the money, I just want them to say sorry to me." And it was such a beautiful and profound statement that we wrote a song of it. And we also deal with things of addiction, where, you know, all of us, or so many of us, grow up around and immersed in addiction and that sort of thing. A song called Beautiful Me, which is a song about overcoming addiction, and anyone who's seen someone overcome that battle, just that whatever that switch is inside of us as human beings that clicks when that individual finally makes a decision that they're not going to let alcohol or drugs own their spirits and their minds and their bodies, and they're going to overcome it. It's just such a beautiful thing to watch, and that song's about that. So that's just a few of the songs that deal with some specific issues on the CD.
And that's some pretty serious some serious stuff there. And I was going to ask you a little bit about your other CD you released, 1492 to 1975. You want to talk a little bit about that one?
Sure, that was the first CD. I used to be with a band called Eagle and Hawk, because I was playing in the Canadian Football League at the time, and we were touring Europe. I stepped down from there and began on my own solo career as Little Hawk, and had this concept idea for an album where I wanted to write the landing of Columbus until I wrote a, or read a book called In the Spirit of Crazy Horse by Peter Matheson that tells the horrible miscarriage of justice that happened with Leonard Peltier being in jail for over 35 years. So I thought I would use those two points in history, the landing of Columbus and to the shootout at Pine Ridge in 1975, use those two as bookends, and then just go through some historical events, because I'd heard of things of Wounded Knee, and I was aware of that, and aware of Custer's Last Stand, and aware of the Sand Creek Massacre, aware of some of the Spanish conquistadors, like Cortez and that sort of thing, but didn't really know much about them, so I just thought that I'd go through, you know, read some books and get to a deeper understanding of some of these stories, and try and express these stories through song, which is really neat, because to take a book like In the Spirit of Crazy Horse, that's 457 pages long, and try and condense the remarkable story of that into a song was really challenging. After I read that book, I was writing down lines that rhymed throughout reading that book, and I had 12 pages of rhyming lines for Foolscap, and I had to break that down into a song. It was a real neat journey. It took me 2 years to write that all the lyrics for that CD. So it was a real interesting thing. And then my next CD, Home and Native Land, was there was some history involved still, Canadian history involved in that song, as well as social observation and stuff like that. So it's, I like to think that art in general can incite and help to lead to debate and argument and affect things positively around us and cause change and that sort of thing. So I like to think that the words and the message of the songs can almost become weapons of change, just to get people to, you know, think and just maybe affect positive change around us.
I think it would happen. One of the other things I'd like to know is how would you describe your music?
Well, as far as the genre goes, it's tough to. No artist probably likes to get pigeonholed. I think for sure it's folk music. At the heart of folk music, what it was in the 60s and 70s, where typically our songs are about social issues or things of that nature. And so I think that it would be probably some sort of blend of folk and roots, and then of course we utilize it. You know, there are some drum songs where I'll sing in English, but you know, use my hand drum with Six Nations on the CD Vigilance, where we're speaking about that situation in Six Nations in Caledonia, and also a song called Then They Came, where I was approached by some people in a community here called Grand Rapids to sing about when Hydro came and put the dam up, how it was just silence. So it used to be a roaring river going through the community, and how the elders cried forever when that dam just brought that silence instantaneously like that. And so the song Then They Came is about that. And so we definitely mix some traditional elements of First Nation music instrumentation and ideas and that sort of thing, and approach to songwriting, and then blend it with, I guess, a current understanding of folk and roots and that sort of thing. And you just hope when you write a song that it catches a little bit of fire, catches someone's attention, or helps to inspire someone. We've been really fortunate since we started doing this to make a pretty good connection with a lot of people in the community.
Awesome. And I was asking about what kind of, how would you describe your music? And you talked about that no artist likes to be pigeonholed. And then we come to the Juno nominees, and there's an Aboriginal category. But do you think that your music could fit other categories other than the Aboriginal category?
Yeah, well, I'm in a interesting instance here. Like, I think a lot of the people, I was traditionally adopted by Dave and Oriana Kershane of the Saguenay First Nation. So, you know, my music, if there's a genre for Aboriginal music, I have no doubt that my music fits into that. I've also presented my music for awards and stuff like that in folk and for different musical awards, whether the Canadian Aboriginal Music Awards, the Aboriginal People's Choice, I submit for folk, and the folk Canadian folk music comes around and I submit it for that. So I feel comfortable whether, you know, in either of those sort of realms. And, you know, if I were singing, sometimes irregardless of who we're singing, if people are interested in these sort of issues and that sort of thing and whatever genre that fits into, I'm pretty open-minded and interested in sharing the music with people who are interested in hearing it.
Excellent. And tell us how you feel about your Juno nomination.
Well, this is really fortunate and very lucky. This is the second time to be nominated in this category, and it's an absolute honor.
That was Troy Littlehawk, 2011 Juno nominee. And now here's a song from Vigilance. Here's $13,000.
I name is Jane and I live downtown. A simple life's been handed down. It took me away when I was five. The wounds have healed, the blood has dried. I will never forget what they did to me. Had to move on to survive, you see. $13,000 is what they gave to me. $13,000, now I can go on a shopping spree. I might take my kids on a nice vacation, buy me a year of groceries. Canada, I still got the memories. Took me a while to get strong again. Atrocities mind-boggling. Money can't buy you a clear conscience. Would help me to forgive if you just said it. Your money don't mean that much to me. Couple of words could set you free. $13,000 is what they gave to me. $13,000, now I can go on a shopping spree. I might take my kids on a nice vacation, buy me a year of groceries. Canada, I still got the memories. $13,000 is what they gave to me. $13,000, now I can go on a shopping spree. I might take my kids on a nice vacation, buy me a year of groceries. Canada. Still got the memories.
Eagle and Hawk is also up for Best Aboriginal Recording. Vince Fontaine of the group starts out discussing the album that has been nominated, The Great Unknown.
Well, The Great Unknown is kind of a special CD. It's actually written for a specific purpose. A gentleman from New York, his name is Keith King. He's a Broadway producer, kind of called me about 2 years ago, basically commissioned me to write music for a Broadway script, a potential play on Broadway. And the story was about the famous story about Orpheus, which is the love and loss of a young person loses their love of their life, to death. And they use all their powers to stop the process, trying to find the spirits to stop the, you know. And what he did with my help was rewrote that story with a twist in his context. In some of our traditions and stories of the spirit world and the grandfather spirit. So there's a lot of songs. The whole CD follows that whole script of love and loss. So, for example, track one is What If We Could. It's kind of almost a prophetic foretale of, you know, the young man talking about his devotion and love to the love of his life, and next thing you know, she's not there. He things, what if we could, I wish we could fly together forever. And then the CD just carries on into those stories of love and loss. And a song like the Water Song, for example, is my interpretation of using the water spirit to get to the next spirit world, etc. And then, the final track on the CD, I'm just running ahead really quick here, is called Someday I'll See You Again. I think it's a wonderful, beautiful, powerful ballad. And the lyric is, someday I'll see you again. I'm not afraid anymore. And while everybody in this world knows love and loss, and this particular CD is kind of dedicated to that, it's called The Great Unknown for a few reasons. The Great Unknown is, of course, the afterlife. It's also related to the great unknown, the most greatest unknown that we have in our lives is love, really. And that was my interpretation. And so the song Great Unknown is basically featuring a female singer. And in this case, the context of my interpretation of the Broadway production was a female shaman singing to our main character, where do I go? How do I get this this distraught heart of mine off? And he just says, go to the great unknown, love, right? So anyways, that's kind of sums up the particular CD. I liked it so much, I thought, well, why don't I put it into an Eagle and Hawk CD, because it features Jay Bodner, the singer from Eagle and Hawk. So.
Okay, and what was it like rewriting a classic like Orpheus?
Oh, it was really difficult. I really had to research. I had to put myself into the character with my Ojibwe heritage hat on. It was really a wonderful experience. It was an exercise in art, really. I'm an artist, I suppose, and a composer, and it was a discipline. I had to research it from different angles, the original story and its text, and research it into writing what the new context was about. At the end of the day, it's still music and entertainment. You know, we're not trying to give a whole factual account of a story. It's just, it's still art and entertainment at the end of the day.
So you were saying the song Someday I'll See You Again features a female singer, and who is the female singer?
Oh, no, it's the song The Great Unknown features a female singer. Her name is Jaylene Johnson. She is a wonderful singer from Winnipeg. But the song Someday I'll See You Again, that's Jay Bodner. That's the power ballad, the last track. You'd find that on probably the Eagle and Hawk MySpace or something like that.
Okay, and do you have any comments on the 2011 Juno nomination?
No, I mean, it's just, always wonderful to participate in these awards. We've been to the Junos before. They're always a great opportunity for new and young artists to be recognized, especially the Aboriginal artists. A lot of them aren't known. This new group, I see Ceremony. Oh, there's a great voice on that. And, I see Little Hawk is nominated for Derek Miller. A lot of people know Derek Miller. He's already won a Juno, I think two, actually. Joey Styles is actually another person we know quite well. So there's good talent, and it's great for all these artists, for sure. Thumbs up to all of them.
That was artist Vince Fontaine with the group Eagle and Hawk. The other contenders in the Best Aboriginal Recording category for a 2011 Juno include Joey Styles and Ceremony, who I hope to have on Bombsida next week. You've been listening to Bombsida with Jennifer Ashwasige. Bombsida is an Aboriginal news magazine program which includes current affairs, arts and entertainment, and a cross-genre of music from Aboriginal artists. Bombsida means walking together in the Anishinaabe language. Music for the program is courtesy of Burnt Project One. If you have comments or story ideas, visit my website at bombseda.com. That's B-A-M-O-S-E-D-A. And thanks for listening to Bombseda.